Welcome, everybody, and we welcome you to the Hebraic Heritage Yeshiva Discipleship Program. And we're going to be sharing with you a message today entitled The Israel-Arab Peace Process, and explaining that these things are based upon UN resolutions. And in doing so, we're going to explain and show you the significance of that being the case. In this teaching, in order for you to get a good perspective and understanding that the peace process is based upon UN resolutions, I'm going to give you a background of the history of the modern state of Israel, and then we're going to go and examine documents which Israel has signed over the years, showing you that this whole peace process is based upon UN resolutions, meaning that it's based upon international law and Israel's compliance with international law, which makes ultimately the creation of a Palestinian state with East Jerusalem as its capital inevitable. In 1897, Theodor Herzl called the first Zionist Congress at Basel, Switzerland. It opened on August the 29th, and it was attended by some 204 participants from 17 countries. At this time, the World Zionist Organization was established, and Theodor Herzl became its first president. Here he officially launched the Zionist movement with a specific statement of purpose. The object of Zionism is to establish for the Jewish people a publicly and legally assured home in Palestine. Herzl's efforts was picked up by Chaim Weizmann, and Herzl died at a young age, at 44, and the desires and the dreams of Theodor Herzl became the aspirations of Chaim Weizmann. Now, the background of Chaim Weizmann is he was a chemist who lived in Britain. And because of World War I, Britain had a need that Weizmann was able to meet. When the World War I Allies' supply of acetone to produce munitions began to run out, which was previously imported from Germany, the British staff called on Weizmann to find some substitute. Following a two-year project, his team developed a superior synthetic that made a considerable contribution to the Allied war effort. And from his efforts, he was able to get a commitment from the British government of their efforts to work to create a Jewish state. And this was in what was regarded as the Balfour Declaration, which was signed November the 2nd, 1917. The Balfour Declaration stated the following: Dear Lord Rothschild, I have much pleasure in conveying to you on behalf of His Majesty's government the following declaration of sympathy with Jewish Zionist aspirations, which has been submitted to and approved by the Cabinet. His Majesty's government views with favor the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people, and will use their best endeavor to facilitate the achievement of this object, it being clearly understood that nothing shall be done which may prejudice the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine, or the rights and political status enjoyed by Jews in any other country. I should be grateful if you would bring this declaration to the knowledge of the Zionist Federation. So the Balfour Declaration got rolled into what became known as the British Mandate. And here, as the British Mandate was, April of 1920, it was given international approval by the Council of the League of Nations on June the 28th, 1919. And the British Mandate included all the land, what is now known as Jordan plus modern-day Israel. That included the Gaza, the West Bank, and the Golan Heights. However, the Arabs were unhappy that the Jews would get so much land, and so they voiced their displeasure regarding the Jews getting the land. And as a result of the Arab protest, before its final sanction on September the 29th, 1922, the homeland projected for the Jews had been reduced to exclude Transjordan when Great Britain created the state of Transjordan under the kingship of Abdullah ibn Hussein. And that in order to satisfy the Arabs, this was land that was appropriated for a Jewish state that was given to the Arabs who protested for the sake of peace. And so 77% of the British Mandate was given to Jordan. Well, there continued to be an ongoing conflict between the effort to create this Jewish state and the Arabs who opposed it. And the British got frustrated with implementing the British Mandate, and they gave the issue over to the United Nations. And the United Nations voted on November the 29th, 1947, regarding the solution for the situation. The vote was 33 to 13, mainly the Western Bloc against the Muslim and Asian blocs. 11 nations abstained, including Britain. And the United Nations voted to divide what remained of the land that was appropriated for a Jewish state as a part of the British Mandate. They voted to create a Arab state, a Jewish state, and to make Jerusalem an international city. And Jerusalem being an international city became UN Resolution 181. This plan was to be implemented at the termination of the British Mandate, which was May the 14th, 1948. So it was on that day at the end of the British Mandate and the beginning of what was to be the implementation of the UN Partition Plan, that is the day that Israel declared its independence. But immediately there was war that broke out because the Arabs did not want to accept even a reduced Jewish state in the region. Now, the plan to make Jerusalem an international city, UN Resolution 181, stated the following. In Part 3, Section A of UN Resolution 181, the city of Jerusalem was established as a corporate separatum under a special international regime and to be administered by the United Nations. Thus, the plan of the United Nations for Jerusalem was that it was to become an international city. And following the 1948 war of independence, there was a armistice map of 1949, and the picture here shows the armistice demarcation lines, and the 1949 armistice agreement was a set of agreements signed between Israel and Egypt, Jordan, Lebanon, and Syria. On February the 24th, 1949, Egypt was given the Gaza Strip. On April the 3rd, 1949, Jordan maintained the West Bank, known as the Green Line, and East Jerusalem. Now, in 1950, Jordan formally annexed the West Bank, but this move was only recognized by England and Pakistan. For the next 17 years, that is until 1967, the West Bank was governed as a part of Jordan. And there, the Palestinians were granted full citizenship. Relations, however, between the Jordanians and the West Bank Palestinians were strained over that period of time. Now, the entity which is presently representing and desiring for the creation of a Palestinian state in the West Bank and the Gaza with East Jerusalem as its capital is called the Palestinian Liberation Organization. And the goal of the organization was to liberate Palestine or to do away with the Jewish state. And this organization was formed before the 1967 war. It was formed in 1964 through the efforts of Egyptian President Nasser. Nasser sought to promote an underground forum for the Palestinian people. This was first called the Palestinian Liberation Army, later the PLO. Chosen as leader was Ahmad Shukari, a puppet of Nasser, who set up headquarters in Cairo, Egypt. The expressed purpose of this organization was to allow the Palestinian people to play a role in the liberation of their country and their self-determination. The Arab leaders who set it up, however, had other designs for the organization. They intended to make it an instrument of guerrilla warfare against Israel under their control. They had no intention of creating an independent Palestinian movement. 6 years after Nasser created the PLO, which was in 1964, Yasser Arafat started his own group in Syria to liberate Palestine. Then living in Kuwait, Arafat and a handful of revolutionaries created a military organization. They called it the Palestinian National Liberation Movement. In Arabic, the initials spelled out Hataf. Turning the letters around, you spell Fatah, which is a reverse acronym of the name of the movement in Arabic. The word Fatah means conquest by means of jihad, or Islamic holy war. So Arafat led the Fatah movement, and his death, Mahmoud Abbas, took over the Fatah faction of the PLO. And the name means conquest by means of jihad. When Arafat took over the PLO, the organization reverted to cell groups developed by its Fatah members in Syria. First, it was basically a guerrilla organization that worked underground apart from the national armies or agencies. Its single purpose was to evict the Israelis from the land and to set up an independent Palestinian state, not one in tandem with Jordan or any other Arab state. Second, it intended to achieve its goals by armed conflict, using infiltration and terror to drive out the occupiers of the West Bank and Gaza Strip. Following the June 67 war, two different schools of thought developed among the Arabs concerning how to defeat Israel. It was in 1967 that the Arabs attacked Israel, and Israel, in self-defense, won the war. The Arabs, even though they lost the war, did not give up in their desire and their efforts to do away with the state of Israel. So there were two competing thoughts regarding how you proceed from 1967 to eradicate the state of Israel. One is called the phase plan destruction of Israel, and this is the path that is being pursued by the Fatah movement. And the other is to not even recognize Israel in any way, shape, or form. Don't even dialogue with it, but defeat it simply through military conquest. That's the approach that's being taken by Hamas. So this first school of thought held that since it was no longer possible to defeat Israel by conventional means, then there was no choice but to make formal peace with the Jewish nation. This view was held by Anwar Sadat of Egypt, who accepted then Israel Prime Minister Menachem Begin of the Likud Party, his invitation to help negotiate a settlement with Israel. The peace treaty called the Camp David Accords was drafted in late 1978 and signed in early 1979. The second school of thought held that since it was no longer possible to defeat Israel within her existing boundaries, then the course of action should be to first reduce Israel to the pre-67 borders and to destroy her. This view was officially adopted by the PLO at their 1974 conference in Cairo, Egypt. And its goal was to, in Article 2, establish a combatant national authority over every part of Palestinian territory that is liberated. Article 8, to use that territory to continue the fight against Israel. That's actually Article 4. Article 8 is to start a pan-Arab war to complete the liberalization of all the Palestinian territory. So parts of Articles 2 and 4 are being worked upon, and we could soon see the Pan-American, the Pan-Arab war that will come about as a result of an effort to set up a Palestinian state. So the text of the phase plan destruction of Israel, adopted at the 12th session of the Palestinian National Council, June the 9th, 1974, the text was the following. On the basis of the Palestinian National Charter and the political program drawn up at the 11th session, held from January the 6th through the 12th, 1973, and from its belief that it is impossible for a permanent and just peace to be established in the area unless our Palestinian people recover all their national rights, and first and foremost, their rights to return into self-determination on the whole of the soil of their homeland, and in the light of a study of the new political circumstances that have come into existence in the period between the Council's last and present sessions, they resolve the following. Number one, to reaffirm the Palestinian Liberation Organization's previous attitude to UN Resolution 242, which obliterates the national right of our people and deals with the cause of our people as a problem of refugees. The Council therefore refuses to have anything to do with this resolution at any level, Arab or international, including the Geneva Conference. Number two, the Liberation Organization will employ all means, and first and foremost, armed struggle, to liberate Palestinian territory and to establish the independent combatant national authority for the people over every part of Palestinian territory that is liberated. This will require further changes being effected in the balance of power in favor of our people and their struggle. Number three, any step taken toward liberalization is a step toward the realization of the organization's strategy of establishing the democratic Palestinian state specified in the resolutions of previous Palestinian national councils. Number eight, the Liberation Organization will strive to strengthen its solidarity with the socialist countries and with forces of liberalization and progress throughout the world, with the aim of frustration of all schemes of Zionism, reaction, and imperialism. The Executive Committee of the Palestinian Liberation Organization will make every effort to implement this program. And should a situation arise affecting the destiny and the future of the Palestinian people, the National Assembly will be convened in extraordinary session. So, from this phase plan destruction of Israel, here we can see it initially rejected UN Resolution 242, which was passed following the June 67 war in November of 1967. Originally, there was a rejection of UN Resolution 242. Well, with the June 67 war, Israel, in defending itself against a Arab attack on all sides, it obtained the Sinai, the Gaza, and the West Bank, as well as the Golan Heights. And in this war, it was only in 2 days' time that the Egyptian army in the Sinai was wiped out. Israel then had the Sinai and the Gaza Strip. In the north, after a desperate and costly tank battle, the Syrians were routed and the Golan Heights was taken. Thus ended the long nightmare of Syrian bombardment of Galilee villages. Israel was now more secure on her northern border. In the battle with Jordan, Israel gained control of the West Bank and the old city of Jerusalem. By gaining control of the West Bank, the cities of Bethlehem, Hebron, Jericho, and Shechem, as well as Jerusalem, came into Israeli hands. For the first time in 1900 years, the Jews also had control of the old city of Jerusalem. However, these lands became a source of strife and contention. And the Arabs could not be satisfied with their defeat. And they began a international campaign to receive the lands back. Now let's look following the June 1967 war that the United Nations Security Council passed UN Resolution 242. This happened on November the 22nd, 1967. The basis of UN Resolution 242 is that Israel will withdraw from the areas it obtained and defeating the Arab attack, and Israel would be promised peace with secure borders. So, reading UN Security Council Resolution 242, the Security Council expressing its continued concern with the grave situation in the Middle East, emphasizing the inadmissibility of the acquisition of territory by war and the need to work for a just and lasting peace in which every state in the area can live in security, emphasizing further that all member states in their acceptance of the Charter of the United Nations have undertaken a commitment to act in accordance with Article 2 of the Charter, affirms that the fulfillment of Charter principles requires the establishment of a just and lasting peace in the Middle East, which should include the application of both the following principles. Number one, the withdrawal of Israeli armed forces from territories occupied in the recent conflict. And number two, the termination of all claims of states of belligerency and respect for and acknowledgement of the sovereignty, territorial integrity, and political independence of every state in the area and their right to live in peace with secure and recognized borders. So UN Resolution 242 is based upon land for peace, peace with security. Now, following the Yom Kippur War of 1973, in October the 22nd, 1973, there was the passage of UN Security Council Resolution 338. And UN Resolution 338 affirmed UN Resolution 242 and everything regarding it. Well, in 1978 came the Camp David Accords. And there was, from the Camp David Accords, an agreed framework for peace in the Middle East. And the preamble of the framework of the Camp David Accords was that in searching for peace in the Middle East, it must be guided by the following principles. The agreed basis for a peaceful settlement of the conflict between Israel and its neighbors is UN Security Council Resolution 242 and all of its parts. So, the Camp David Accords became an official peace agreement between Israel and Egypt that was signed in 1979. And so, continue reading from the framework of the Camp David Accords of 1978. It says, to achieve a relationship of peace in the spirit of Article 2 of the United Nations Charter, future negotiations between Israel and any neighbor prepared to negotiate peace and security with it are necessary for the purpose of carrying out all the provisions and principles of UN Resolutions 242 and 338. So the Camp David Accords was based upon UN Resolutions 242 and 338. Now, Section A of the framework says, Egypt, Israel, Jordan, and the representatives of the Palestinian people should participate in negotiations on the resolution of the Palestinian problem in all of its aspects. To achieve that objective, negotiations relating to the West Bank and the Gaza will proceed in three stages. So they set out a political process to help to return the West Bank and the Gaza into Arab lands as well. And these steps, it says, that the negotiations would be based upon UN Resolution 242, and the solution from negotiations must also recognize the legitimate right of the Palestinian peoples. That ultimately is referring to a Palestinian state. And in order to affirm that this agreement is under the authority of the United Nations, it is agreed that the site of the negotiations will be under a UN flag. And all the principles of UN Resolution 242 will apply in this resolution of the dispute between Israel and Egypt. This Camp David framework became then a formal peace agreement between Israel and Egypt, signed on March 26, 1979. And in the preamble of the peace agreement between Israel and Egypt, it says, convinced of the urgent necessity and of the establishment of a just, comprehensive, and lasting peace in the Middle East in accordance with UN Security Council Resolutions 242 and 338, noting that the aforementioned framework, as appropriate, is intended to constitute a basis for peace, not only between Egypt and Israel, but also between Israel and each of its Arab neighbors, which is prepared to negotiate peace with it on the basis of UN Resolutions 242 and 338. Then, in discussing peace between Israel and her neighbors, we have the Israeli Peace Initiative of May the 14th, 1989, formulated between Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir of the Likud Party in Israel and Defense Minister Yitzhak Rabin of the Labor Party. And it says that this initiative is based on the Camp David Accords and in turn forms the basis of the Madrid Framework. The text of Israel's peace initiative is, the document includes the principles on which the initiative is based and details for its implementation. The basic premises of Israel's peace initiative is that here Israel stated that it opposed the establishment of additional Palestinian state in the Gaza and in the West Bank, and Israel will not conduct negotiations with the PLO. And in order to advance the political negotiation leading to peace, Israel proposes free and democratic elections among the Palestinian Arabs of Judea, Samaria, and the Gaza district. And in these elections, a representation will be chosen to conduct negotiations for a transitional period of self-rule. The interlock between the stages is a timetable in which the plan is built. The peace process delineated by the initiative is based upon UN Resolution 242 and 338, upon which the Camp David Accords are founded. Then, in order to help to bring these things to fruition, George Bush, the father, organized a international peace conference held in Madrid, Spain, October the 30th, 1991. And it specified as a part of the goals of the conference that talks with the Palestinians on a five-year interim self-rule to be followed by talks on a permanent status agreement. The text of the invitation to the 1991 Madrid Peace Conference is the following. After extensive consultation with Arab states, Israel, and the Palestinians, the United States and the Soviet Union believe that a historic opportunity exists to advance the prospects for genuine peace throughout the Middle East. The United States and the Soviet Union are prepared to assist the parties to achieve a just, lasting, and comprehensive peace settlement based on UN Security Council Resolutions 242 and 338. Toward that end, the President of the United States and the President of the Soviet Union invite you to a peace conference that will be held on Madrid, Spain, October the 30th, 1991. The European community will participate in the conference alongside the United States and the Soviet Union. With respect to negotiations between Israel and the Palestinians, who are part of the joint Jordanian-Palestinian delegation, negotiations will be conducted in phases, beginning with talks on interim self-government arrangements. These will lead to permanent status negotiations, and the negotiations between Israel and the Arab states will take place on the basis of UN Resolutions 242 and 338. Well, ultimately, things didn't come together until 1993. And given that in the phase plan destruction of Israel that was presented in Cairo in 1974, wherein there was a rejection of UN Resolution 242. Yasser Arafat wrote a letter to then Prime Minister of Israel, Yitzhak Rabin, September the 9th, 1993, wherein, in this letter, Yasser Arafat stated that the PLO was willing to accept UN Resolutions 242 and 338 and recognizing Israel's right to exist with peace and security. So the letter to Yasser, from Yasser Arafat to Yitzhak Rabin, stated, this was September the 9th, 1993, Mr. Prime Minister, the signing of the Declaration of Principles marks a new era in the history of the Middle East. In firm conviction thereof, I would like to confirm the following PLO commitments. The PLO recognizes the right of the State of Israel to exist in peace and security, and the PLO accepts UN Security Council Resolutions 242 and 338. In view of the promise of a new era and the signing of the Declaration of Principles, and based upon Palestinian acceptance of Security Council Resolutions 242 and 338, the PLO affirms that those articles of the Palestinian Covenant which deny Israel's right to exist, and the provisions of the covenant which are inconsistent with the commitments of this letter, are now inoperative and no longer valid. Well, even though he stated those words, ultimately, those parts of the covenant were not eradicated. Now, in reply to this letter on September the 9th, 1993, is a letter from Yitzhak Rabin to Yasser Arafat. Mr. Chairman, in response to your letter of September the 9th, 1993, I wish to confirm to you that in light of the PLO commitments included in your letter, the government of Israel has decided to recognize the PLO as the representative of the Palestinian people and to begin negotiations with the PLO within the Middle East peace process. This was known as the Oslo Accords and signed September the 13th, 1993 was a declaration of principles of interim self-government arrangements. And it says, the government of the State of Israel and the PLO team representing the Palestinian people agree that it's time to put an end to decades of confrontation and conflict, recognize their mutual legitimate and political rights, and the two sides agree to the following principles. Article 1, aim of the negotiations. The aim of the Israeli-Palestinian negotiations within the current Middle East peace process is, among other things, to establish a Palestinian interim self-government authority for the Palestinian people in the West Bank of the Gaza Strip for a transitional period not exceeding 5 years, leading to a permanent settlement based upon UN Security Council Resolutions 242 and 338. It is understood that the interim arrangements are an integral part of the whole peace process and that the negotiations on the permanent status will lead to the implementation of Security Council Resolutions 242 and 338. There was an agreement on the Gaza Strip in the Jericho area, May the 4th, 1994. And in the preamble of this agreement, it says, within the framework of the Middle East peace process initiated at Madrid in October of 1991, and reaffirming their adherence to the mutual recognition and commitments expressed in the letters dated September the 9th, 1993, signed by and exchanged between the Prime Minister of Israel and the Chairman of the PLO, reaffirming their understanding that the interim self-government arrangements, including the arrangements to apply in the Gaza Strip and the Jericho area, are an integral part of the whole peace process, and that the negotiations on the permanent status will lead to the implementation of Security Council Resolutions 242 and 338. And then we have July the 25th, 1994, the Washington Declaration between Israel, Jordan, and the United States. And it states in Part B, in their meeting, His Majesty King Hussein and Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin have jointly reaffirmed five underlying principles. Principle number two, the two countries will vigorously continue their negotiations to arrive at a state of peace based on Security Council Resolutions 242 and 338. And number four, the two countries recognize their right and obligation to live in peace with each other as well as with all states within secure and recognized boundaries. This led to a formal peace agreement between Israel and Jordan signed October 26, 1994. And in the preamble it says, the government of the state of Israel and the government of the Hashemite kingdom of Jordan, bearing in mind the Washington Declaration signed by them on the 25th of July 1994, of which they are both committed to honor, aiming at the achievement of a just, lasting, and comprehensive peace in the Middle East based upon Security Council Resolutions 242 and 338, reaffirming their faith in the purposes and principles of the Charter of the United Nations. And so we see that the peace agreement between Israel and Jordan was based upon UN Resolutions 242-338. The Oslo Accords, UN Resolutions 242 and 338. That the peace agreement between Israel and Egypt, based upon UN Resolutions 242 and 338. Then, in 1995, we have a Israeli-Palestinian interim agreement that was made September 28, 1995. And in the preamble of this agreement, within the framework of the Middle East peace process initiated at Madrid in October 1991, reaffirming their desire to achieve a just, lasting, and comprehensive peace settlement, recognize that the peace process and the new era that is created, as well as the new relationship established between the two parties, are irreversible, recognizing that the aim of the Israeli-Palestinian negotiations within the current Middle East peace process is to establish a Palestinian interim self-government authority for the Palestinian people in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. It's to be for a transitional period not to exceed 5 years from the date of the signing of the agreement. On the Gaza Strip and the Jericho area. On May the 4th, 1994, leading to a permanent settlement based upon UN Resolutions 242 and 338. This will lead to a permanent agreement. Continuing on, specifying what the Israeli-Palestinian Interim Agreement of 1995 stated, reaffirming their adherence to the mutual recognition and commitments expressed in the letters dated September the 9th, 1993, signed by an exchange between the Prime Minister of Israel and the Chairman of the PLO, desiring of putting into effect the Declaration of Principles on the Interim Self-Government Arrangement signed at Washington on September the 13th, 1993, in order that the Palestinian people in the West Bank, Jerusalem, and the Gaza Strip may democratically elect accountable representatives, recognizing that these elections will constitute a significant interim preparation step toward the realization of the legitimate rights of the Palestinian people, and it will provide a democratic basis for the establishment of Palestinian institutions. So the goal of the interim self-agreement is to ultimately begin the process to create, in essence, a Palestinian state where the Palestinian people would be able to govern themselves in the West Bank, Jerusalem, and the Gaza Strip. Secretary of State Madeleine Albright of the Clinton administration in 1997 called upon Israel to implement the interim agreements with the Palestinians. And she went on to say she supported, she gave U.S. support for U.N. Security Council Resolutions 242 and 338, including the principle of land for peace. The State of Israel formally, publicly, spoke out in favor of a Palestinian state in 1999, and it was Shimon Peres who did so. This is an article from January the 12th, 1999, seeking to convince themselves and others that the peace process can be resuscitated, the architects of the Oslo Agreement and an array of international luminaries came together for a peace gathering in Ramallah that rapidly became a show of support for Palestinian statehood. Labor Knesset member Shimon Peres, in the first address by an Israeli to the Palestinian Legislative Council, told its members and more than 100 international figures affiliated with the Peres Center for Peace, that is our deep hope that not only that the Palestinian people will gain independence, but it's our common interest to see a Palestinian state take place as a result of an agreement. In 1999, we had the Sharm el-Sheikh memorandum. And in this memorandum, it was on the implementation of a timeline of outstanding commitments of agreements signed and the resumption of permanent status negotiations. The government of the State of Israel and the Palestinian Liberation Organization commit themselves to full and mutual implementation of the interim agreement and all other agreements concluded between them since September of 1993. And the two sides have agreed as follows. In Section 1, under the heading of permanent status negotiations, in the context of the implementation of the prior agreements, the two sides will resume the permanent status negotiations in an accelerated manner and will make a determined effort to achieve their mutual goal of reaching a permanent status agreement based on the agreed agenda. The two sides reaffirm their understanding that the negotiations on the permanent status will lead to the implementation of Security Council Resolutions 242 and 338. The memorandum will enter into force 1 week from the date of the signature, made and signed, Sharm el-Sheikh, the fourth day of September, 1999. Then, in July of 2000, there was a trilateral meeting at Camp David between U.S. President Bill Clinton, Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak, Palestinian Authority Chairman Yasser Arafat. The meetings took place between July 11th and the 24th, and a statement was made on July the 25th that both sides agree that the negotiations is based upon UN Security Council Resolutions 242 and 338, and that's the only way to achieve an agreement. Then we have on March the 12th, 2002, the passage of UN Security Council Resolution 1397. And this UN resolution affirmed UN Resolutions 242 and 338, and it made a declaration for the outcome of peace negotiations that there be a two-state solution, a Palestinian state in the current state of Israel. So, in an agreement based upon UN Resolutions 242 and 338, based on the principle of withdrawal of land in exchange for Israel having security, and the setup of a Palestinian state based upon UN Security Council Resolutions 1397, is already international law. It has just not been implemented yet. And I believe the international community in the United States desires that they, in a very short time, see the ultimate implementation of these agreements. Well, in March the 28th, 2002, there was a Saudi peace initiative proposed as a part of what's known as the Beirut Declaration. And the Saudi peace initiative made the offer that full diplomatic relations would be set up between the Arab nations and Israel in exchange for Israel withdrawing to the pre June 4th, 1967 borders. It is based upon Israel giving up the Gaza Strip, the West Bank, East Jerusalem, and the Golan Heights. And that a solution be found for the Palestinian refugee problem as agreed upon based upon UN General Assembly Resolution 194. And the proposal of the Saudi Peace Initiative is Israel would return to pre-June 4th, 67 borders, and a Palestinian state would be set up with East Jerusalem as its capital. And so, this is the framework from which the negotiations have been conducted throughout the years. And ultimately then, on April the 30th, 2003, in order to once again come up with a plan of implementation to have a two-state solution, the roadmap was established. The roadmap for peace. This was April the 30th, 2003. And the roadmap says, the following is a performance-based and goal-driven roadmap with clear phases, timelines, target dates, and benchmarks aimed at progress through reciprocal steps by the two parties in the political, security, economic, humanitarian, and institution-building fields under the auspices of the quartet, the United States, the European Union, the United Nations, and Russia. The destination is a final and comprehensive settlement of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and the goal of the roadmap was that this would be achieved by 2005. As presented in President Bush's speech of the 24th of June and welcomed by the European Union, Russia, and the UN, a two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict will only be achieved through an end to violence and terrorism when the Palestinian people have a leadership acting decisively against terror and willing and able to build a practicing democracy based on tolerance and liberty, and through Israel's readiness to do what is necessary for a democratic Palestinian state to be established, and a clear and unambiguous acceptance by both parties of the goal of a negotiated settlement as described below. The settlement negotiated between the parties will result in the emergence of an independent, democratic, and viable Palestinian state living side by side in peace and security with Israel and its other neighbors. The settlement will resolve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and the occupation that began in 67 based upon the foundations of the Madrid Conference and the principle of land for peace, UN Security Council Resolutions 242, 338, and 1397. Now, the roadmap had three phases. Phase one is the ending of terror and violence, normalizing Palestinian life, and building Palestinian institutions. In phase one, the Palestinians immediately undertake an unconditional cessation of violence according to the steps outlined below. The Palestinians undertake comprehensive political reform in preparation for statehood, including drafting a Palestinian constitution and free, fair, and open elections. Of course, these elections took place in 1996, and in the elections, Hamas gained control of the Gaza Strip. Fatah is in control of the West Bank. These unequivocal statements reiterating Israel's right to exist in peace and security and calling for an immediate and unconditional ceasefire to end armed activity and all acts of violence against Israelis anywhere. Israeli leadership issues unequivocal statement affirming its commitment to the two-state solution. of an independent, viable, sovereign Palestinian state living in peace and security alongside Israel as expressed by President Bush and calling for immediately end of violence against Palestinians everywhere. Regarding the security, Palestinians declare an unequivocal end of violence and terrorism and undertake visible efforts on the ground to arrest, disrupt, and restrain individuals and groups conducting and planning violent attacks on Israelis anywhere. Palestinian institution building, immediately action on credible process to draft constitution for Palestinian statehood, and an appointment of an interim prime minister or cabinet with empowered executive authority and decision-making body. And regarding settlements, Israel was to freeze all settlement activity, including natural growth of settlements. Now, in this proposed phase two, efforts are focused on the option of creating an independent Palestinian state with provisional borders and attributes of sovereignty based upon the new constitution as a way station to a permanent status settlement. And then, in an international conference convened by the quartet in consultation with the parties, immediately after the successful conclusion of Palestinian elections to support Palestinian economic recovery and launch a process leading to establishment of an independent Palestinian state with provisional borders. Such a meeting would be inclusive based upon the goal of a comprehensive Middle East peace, including between Israel, Syria, Israel, and Lebanon, and based on the principles described in the preamble to this document. A new constitution for democratic, independent Palestinian state is finalized and approved by appropriate Palestinian institutions. Further elections, if required, should follow approval of the new constitution. And then a creation of an independent Palestinian state with provisional borders through a process of Israeli-Palestinian engagements launched by the International Conference. The quartet members promote international recognition of a Palestinian state, including possible UN membership. Phase 3, permanent status agreement. There would be a calling of a second international conference convened by the quartet in consultation with the parties. The goal here was the beginning of 2004, to endorse agreement reached on an independent Palestinian state with provisional borders and formally to launch a process with the active, sustained, and operational support of the quartet, including an agreement on borders, Jerusalem, refugee settlements, and to support progress toward a comprehensive Middle East settlement between Israel and Lebanon and Israel and Syria to be achieved as soon as possible. Parties reach final and comprehensive permanent status agreement that ends the Israeli-Palestinian conflict through a settlement negotiated between the parties based upon UN resolutions 242, 338, and 1397 that ends the occupation that began in 1967. And that there would be a negotiated resolution on the status of Jerusalem that takes into account the political and religious concerns of both sides and protects the religious interests of Jews, Christians, and Muslims worldwide and fulfills the vision of two states, Israel and a sovereign, independent, democratic, and viable Palestinian state living side by side in peace and security. So within these three phases, there's to be Palestinian elections, Palestinian constitution, an effective Palestinian governing authority. The Palestinians would recognize Israel's right to exist and would cease terror and violence and war against Israel. And that there would be international peace conferences that would be called, that there would be a recognition by the international community of a Palestinian state, and there would be ultimate peace made between Israel and Lebanon and Syria, and that These things would be based upon this roadmap, UN Resolutions 24233-8-1397. And in essence, the negotiated resolution on Jerusalem is making it an international city. So Israel has already agreed through these agreements, going back to Oslo, to a Palestinian state with East Jerusalem as its capital. It has just not been implemented yet, but it is, as we speak, it is international law that such be the case. And because it is international law, it is inevitable that a formal Palestinian state will be created with international recognition, with East Jerusalem as its capital and Jerusalem being an international city. Now, as a part of an agreement to work toward that process, Prime Minister Ariel Sharon in 2005 agreed that Israel would withdraw from the Gaza. And this evacuation of the Gaza took place in August of 2005. Since that time of the evacuation of the Gaza, Hamas has now gotten control over the area and used their control of the Gaza to launch rockets into Israel, which resulted in an Israeli invasion into the Gaza in 2008, and Israel imposing a blockade of the Gaza to prevent arms from coming into the region. And as I'm speaking and sharing this presentation, there is now an effort for there to be a lifting of the blockade by the international community. And so we can see then how by looking at the history of the peace process, going back to Israel's agreement with Egypt in 1979 throughout, all of the agreements that Israel signed said that the peace process is based upon UN Resolutions 242 and 338, the principle of land for peace and Israel having the right to have peace and security and the guarantee of that security. And then in 2002, we had UN Resolution 1397, which formally adopted that there be a two-state solution. The roadmap of 2003 and the stages for implementing a plan that will lead to the creation of a Palestinian state with East Jerusalem as its capital and a functioning Palestinian self-government. Now, in a letter that President Bush sent to Ariel Sharon, and this letter was a letter wherein President Bush, and that is the son, said that in making a peace agreement with the Palestinians and setting up a Palestinian state, that the large settlement blocks in Israel would be considered to be able to be annexed as a part of the state of Israel, and that land which would be annexed, an equal amount of land would be given over to the Palestinians, and that this would be mutually agreed upon. Now, there was a commentary that was written by Zbigniew Brzezinski in response to Bush's written letter to Ariel Sharon, wherein Brzezinski explains the following. The statement President Bush delivered at the conclusion of his recent meeting with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas deserves serious attention. It has been much discussed by the Israeli press but drew scant commentary in the U.S. media. The President, in his formal presentation, declared that any final status agreement between the Palestinians and Israelis must be reached between the two parties and changes to the 49 armistice lines must be mutually agreed to. Lest there be any misunderstanding, the President said that Israel should not undertake any activity that contravenes roadmap obligations or prejudice final status negotiations with regard to the Gaza, West Bank, and Jerusalem. A viable two-state solution must ensure congruity of the West Bank, and a state of scattered territories will not work. There must also be meaningful linkages between the West Bank and the Gaza. This is the position of the United States today. It will be the position of the United States at the time of final status negotiations. Brzezinski writes and explains that Bush's declaration was a significant and helpful restatement of some long-held American positions. If these principles are actively embedded in the U.S. policies over the months ahead, they could help further the President's stated goals of resolving the long-running Israeli-Palestinian conflict, promoting democracy in the Middle East, and undercutting support for Islamic terrorism. 38 years ago this month, Israeli forces occupied the Sinai Peninsula and the West Bank, including East Jerusalem and the Gaza and the Syrian Golan Heights. At the time, and without much discussion, President Lyndon Johnson made the decision that Israel should be allowed to hold on to the captured Arab territories until the Arabs were ready to make peace with Israel and offer recognition and security. This Land for Peace principle was later embodied in UN Resolution 242 and ever since has formed the touchstone for all considerations of Arab-Israeli peace. Johnson, while very supportive of Israel, went on record as saying that the future borders of Israel should not reflect the weight of conquest, and that any adjustments to the borders that prevailed before June 67 war should be small and mutually agreed to. Since these foundational statements on the territorial aspect of a peace settlement, the U.S. policy under successive presidents did not change in any significant way until last year. Then, in a letter to Ariel Sharon in April of 2004, Bush seemed to accept the Sharon government's position that new facts on the ground, namely Israeli settlements in the West Bank, made it unrealistic to think that Israel should ever withdraw to the old armistice lines of 1949. He said then that it's unrealistic to expect that the outcome of final status negotiations will be a full and complete return to the armistice lines of 1949, which is the pre-67 borders. Bush also stated that the Palestinian refugees should not expect to return to Israel proper as part of any peace settlement. The Bush letter was widely seen as a triumph for Sharon. For the first time, an American president had openly sided with the current Israeli view that the passage of time and the new realities obviated Israel's obligation to withdraw more or less to the 67 lines in return for peace, recognition, and security. The President's recent elaboration of U.S. policy is essentially a reaffirmation of the traditional American view that the 1949 armistice line should be the starting point for any discussion of border changes, and that changes in them cannot be one-sided. Much like his predecessors, the President also said last month that Israel must continue to take steps toward a peaceful future and work with the Palestinian leadership to improve the daily lives of Palestinians, especially their humanitarian situation. Now, the Palestinian response is they rejected Ariel Sharon in Israel's position. August the 12th, 2005. Palestinian Authority leaders on Thursday strongly condemned Prime Minister Ariel Sharon's statement regarding the future of Jerusalem, settlement blocks in the West Bank, and the right of Palestinian refugees to return to their homes. And Hamas vowed to continue terrorism after the Gaza pullout. And then Mahmoud Abbas reiterated, August the 16th, 2005, there will be no peace agreement without East Jerusalem being its capital. Mahmoud Abbas went on to say, August the 20th, 2005, that the reason for the Gaza withdrawal was terrorism, and that in order to get Israel to withdraw from the West Bank and East Jerusalem, that there must be an element of terrorism to create that pressure. So, because of the success of Palestinian uprisings, world public opinion is demanding that Israel compromise with the PLO and trade land for peace. Prior to the disengagement from the Gaza Strip in August of 2005, the chief rabbi of Haifa, Rabbi Shir Yeshav Cohen, came to Jerusalem and pleaded with Israel's Prime Minister Ariel Sharon to reconsider his plan to retreat from Gush Katif, that's the area in the Gaza, which would involve Israel obliteration of 21 Jewish communities there, including 325 thriving Israeli farms and 86 synagogues and Jewish study centers. Sharon's answer to Rabbi Cohen was, "This is what the U.S. State Department is demanding that I do, and I must do it." In other words, U.S. and international pressure is causing Israel to go forward to seek to create a Palestinian state, even though terror against Israel has not ended, and the Palestinians have not still have settled in their hearts and their minds the permanent existence of the state of Israel. And so we have now studied the modern history of the state of Israel, that beginning with Theodore Herzl and Chaim Weizmann, there was an effort put in place to seek to create a homeland for the Jewish people. This was a part of the British mandate, approved by the League of Nations. However, because of Arab complaints, 77% of the original British mandate land was given for peace, and that portion became the modern state of Jordan. And then we had the 67 and 73 wars where Israel obtained territory, and from obtaining territory, there was the passage of UN Resolutions 242338, based upon the principle of Israel withdrawing from the lands that it obtained in its self-defense in exchange for security and internationally recognized borders and guarantees of its security. So the process of giving back those lands formally came about through a peace agreement between Israel and Egypt, 1979, where it was agreed that that peace agreement and any other future agreements would be based upon the UN resolutions 242 and 338. And then we had the Oslo Accords of 1993, the Interim Agreement of 1995, the Sharm el-Sheikh Memorandum 1999. And the purpose of these agreements was to begin the process to establish a Palestinian state. And before that's actually created, to create a transition period where Palestinian institutions would be built, and that ultimately then there would be cooperation between Israel and the Palestinians regarding this process. Then, in March 12, 2002, we had the passage of UN Security Council Resolution 1397, which is based upon the principle of a two-state solution, a Palestinian state and the present state of Israel. Also in 2002, we had the Saudi Peace Initiative, where the Arab world said that in exchange for Israel returning to the pre-67 borders, that they would recognize Israel's right to exist and have full diplomatic negotiations and relations with Israel. And then in order to begin to implement the transition agreements, we had the Roadmap for Peace of 2003, which tried to set up a time frame for and an implementation plan to set up a democratically elected Palestinian institutions, which happened in 1996. However, in those elections, Hamas took over running the Gaza Strip. They do not recognize Israel's state right to exist. And Fatah, they govern the West Bank. And after Israel's withdrawal from the Gaza area in August of 2005, Hamas began to launch rockets into Israel. And this was an unacceptable situation with Israel. They ultimately then invaded the Gaza Strip at the end of 2008 and set up a blockade of the Gaza. Now, the effort is being made to end that blockade, and we are waiting to see that perhaps in the effort to end that blockade, there could be a breakout of a regional war in the area. We are also, as the moment of sharing this teaching, waiting to see when and how this regional war might break out, and if the nations of the world will go about mandating and pressuring Israel to formally sign the agreement of a Palestinian state based upon 67 borders. Now, these events lead us to the time of the tribulation, and Jacob's trouble is all about the nations dividing the land of Israel and the city of Jerusalem. And Paul wrote in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 2 and 3, "For you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord comes as a thief in the night. For when they say peace and safety or security, then sudden destruction will come upon them as a woman with child." The sudden destruction is war. It's the tribulation period. And so from the viewpoint of the Bible and the God of Israel, the reason why he's allowing these events to happen is through the nations dividing the land of Israel, it will result in the judgment of the nations, war between the nations, economic collapse, and the Messiah will gather the exiles of Israel, bring them back to the land. He will be glorified. He will set up his kingdom, and the Torah will go forth from Jerusalem, wherein Zion redeemed will be the head of all nations. And so right now, all nations have come against Jerusalem to fulfill Zechariah chapter 12. And they are calling those who want to stand for the land, who the Bible calls Zion, and those who, biblically speaking, do not want to give the land away for a Palestinian state. The Bible calls this Zion, that those who stand with biblical Zion, they're being called an outcast. And so as all nations have come against Israel, and those who want to stand for the land are called an outcast, there's a prophecy in Jeremiah 30, verse 17. "I will restore health unto you, and I will heal you of your wound. The wound is the exile. The healing of the wound is the end of the exile. Because they called you an outcast, saying, 'This is Zion, whom no man seeks after. And so he's going to gather the 12 tribes of Israel, and it says in Psalm 102, verse 16, when the Lord builds up Zion, he shall appear in his glory. What is the building up of Zion? It's the building up of Jerusalem. What's the building up of Jerusalem? Gathering the 12 tribes of Israel. It says Psalm 147, verse 2, the Lord builds up Jerusalem, he gathers together the outcasts of Israel. So the result of the dividing of the land, which the Bible calls in Isaiah 34, verse 8, the controversy of Zion, it will result in the Messiah judging the nations and gathering the exiles of Israel, wherein he will be glorified. Because during Jacob's trouble, Jeremiah 30, verse 17, we're told in Jeremiah chapter 30, verse 3, that Israel and Judah will return to the land. For lo, the days come, says the Lord, that I will bring again the captivity of my people, Israel and Judah, says the Lord. I will cause them to return to the land that I gave their fathers, and they will possess it. So in speaking about Israel and Judah returning the land, it goes on to say, alas, for that day is great, the day that Israel and Judah return to the land, which is also the tribulation period. It is the time of Jacob's trouble. But Israel and Judah will be redeemed or saved or protected from their enemies during this time. This is why we're supposed to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Praying for the peace of Jerusalem is praying for the end of the exile, the 12 tribes of Israel. It's praying for the coming of the Messiah. It is praying for the Messianic era. And it's praying, ultimately, for the new heavens and the new earth. Psalm 121, verse 4 says, behold, he that keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. And Psalm 122, verse 6, pray for the peace of Jerusalem. They will prosper that love thee. Remember always these words from 1 John chapter 2 and verse 6. He who says he abides in him, he who says he's a believer in Yeshua as the Messiah, ought himself to walk. That means to live our lives even as he walked. How did Yeshua walk or live his life? He followed the Torah of his father. Even so, he commanded those who believe on him, John 14, verse 15, if you love me, keep my commandments. Shalom in Yeshua the Messiah. Amen.